ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello, and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Christine Ellis and Warren Cottrell. Warren's been on here before. You're probably going to hear him again in the near future. But this week we sit down and I had this big game plan and everything was shifted and changed as we were discussing everything. And it's okay. That's what I loved. We got to have a real genuine conversation and sadly it just ends. There's no goodbyes. There's nothing like that. It just ends. And I didn't get to ask some of my favorite questions at the end of every episode, but I promise you, I will get them out of Christine. Before I say too much more, let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Hi, I'm Christine Ellis with Soccer Innovations. I run their social media. It's my family's company. My dad and mom started it out of our garage about 20 years ago. It's actually our 20-year anniversary. So that's me.
And then I'm Warren Cottle with North Texas State Soccer Association, Director of Coaching and Player Development, and really excited about doing this. And then I do remember the old school days of Soccer Innovation, and your dad's a good man.
Yeah, my dad says they used to call him the blue man. Like, they were all blue to start with.
That's true.
Mannequins.
And I'm Ian Babcock. I'm the host of Chat by the Pitch. I'm just here to have a great conversation today. We'll start off with, Christine, you talked about Warren's program.
Okay, so, was it called again? Yes, my dad, speaking of my dad, he did send me, I don't know what it was, I don't know, a Facebook post or something showing you, Warren, doing something called Soccer for Success, Dallas ISD. I'd love to hear more about that, what it entails.
I'll tell you what, that's one of the more powerful things that I've heard in a very, very long time. And what it is, the U.S. Soccer Foundation, through a grant that they created out of the 94 World Cup, is going into the major cities around the country that are hosting World Cup sites. And what they do is they offer access to schools for PE education, as well as gives each PE program soccer balls. They get 20 soccer balls as part of the deal. And then they get a curriculum that goes from all the way through high school. And so,
and that's
for
just Dallas ISD?
That is anywhere in the Metroplex. So I know that it's got one in Birdville I'm going to be going to soon. And then there's also Northwest ISD, I think, setting up right next to my home. So basically anything within the area. But the goal is really to get soccer education out. And it's beautiful as a teacher, especially the next teacher myself. The curriculum comes with a daily plan. It's based on skills and fundamentals and whatnot. And then it even has the teaks that the teacher would put on the board, what they're looking for, the objectives and everything. So it's unbelievably user-friendly for the elementary perspective as well as the high school PE teacher perspective. But then, and really, and this might be your podcast, so it would be one that would be huge, is they've got really innovative people over at Dallas ISD. And then there's the athletic director, assistant athletic director in charge of soccer with Dallas ISD, named Marisela Lopez. It's actually newer from El Paso. And then Whitaker as well, who's in charge of the PE programs. But what they've done is they're starting something that I think is going to be a major game changer. And what it is at the elementary schools, they're starting to have soccer from, I believe it's fifth and sixth grade, maybe fifth to seventh, and offer a free program for them. They'll have teams, they'll play each other, and really build in soccer out as something special. And I'm not sure where it's going. I know that they're looking to try to really make it special and grow. I could see, and like I said, this is just totally Warren opinion. This is not really Dallas ISD so far. But I can see where you could tie it into grades, but really, and then after school programs for low socioeconomic people and people that can't afford to play the sport, can't afford the cost to go to a high power club. Because if you look at the environment in North Texas alone, and especially in the Metroplex, all your major clubs line up on along 121. And there's a reason for that. And so when you look at that, those kids in Dallas and the, like I said, those parts of inner city Dallas, that great kids, great athletes, but their parents can't afford to take them to up to Frisco, and their parents can't afford after school daycare programs. So the schools are going to offer soccer within the elementary programs. Then that'll feed into middle school programs and into high school programs. But trying to get an outreach to those kids. And I almost thought if you could take that and tie grades to it, and then use that as a platform to develop not just soccer players, but also people in places where there's not a lot of support for education. There's not a lot of things that you can do to help those kids out, but this would actually give kids an opportunity to use the game to get better. And so let's start off with what your dad saw on the social media post. Was that was the first round of elementary teachers, and for my group was specifically middle school and high school coaches, and trying to get them. They're doing a really good job as far as coaching education. They'll bring us in to teach their coaches through the federation, through the licensing programs. But they're putting a lot of effort and emphasis into soccer within the schools. And like I said, Ian, probably the best bet I would say, even beyond this podcast, is to bring Marisela and Dr. Whitaker in and really have them talk about their vision. Because I think that could be a whole new podcast in itself.
I love that. You know, like, have you ever read Soccer Starts at Home by Tom Beyer?
No, I have not.
Okay. So I, a lot of people that know me know that is a book that transformed the way I do things with my kids. And basically, I read it. I mean, my dad told me about this book and his kind of philosophy when I was pregnant with my first. He was already telling me, have little soccer balls in your house. There's this guy named Tom Beyer out of Japan and all this stuff. And at that point, I was married. I was working. Like, soccer was the last thing. I was like, no. So I didn't give it any thought. And it wasn't until my oldest started playing and I saw that he really enjoyed it that I was like, maybe I should look at this book. So I read this book. And basically what it is he takes his young kids He's here we are in America. We don't really have a soccer culture like other countries do. But you can create that culture within your own home. So he built this program out of Japan, and he was on like their morning news, and we'd have these little ball mastery, and he would start it from the very early ages of 2 years old. And it's not like real, it wasn't like real ball mastery skills. It's very much just comfortability around the ball, manipulation inside your foot, just getting them familiar, top of mind with the ball, even from that two age, three age, from the home in a parent encouragement and just having little balls out and win, not forcing them, just win it. And they gravitate to it. And it's not immediate, but I saw it with both. Now my second son is same thing. We have two rebounders in our living room and we have soccer balls all over because I've seen the benefits. Like my oldest was not naturally coordinated. He was not naturally technical at all. And as soon as we did this ball mastery, it took about 6 months for you to really, all of a sudden it transformed the way that he played. And everybody noticed, everybody on our team noticed, because he was always a strong, physical, fast player, but he was like bulldozer kind of kid. And then all of a sudden he now has like such great control. And I feel like that's such a gift that you can give these kids from these young ages. But in that book, he mentioned he's in America, there's tons of elementary schools and tons of middle schools that have gyms. Why aren't we in that gym having a futsal ball at their foot and teaching them to manipulate it? Because for two different reasons. One, it's to get the culture and get soccer more popular in the country. But then the second reason was when you're doing ball mastery, it's also a mental and a physical task. So apparently when you merge the two, I'm not science-y backgroundy, but apparently when you merge the two, that's when real wires start crossing and the things start clicking and you can really start forming habits and memory of that. So there's always mentions about how it actually made them smarter in a sense by manipulating the ball is where he was going with that. So I've always thought, man, I mean, I live right across the street from elementary school. And I was like, I need to go talk to your gym teacher, see if I can go in there and teach futsal and have these programs, because I feel like they are so beneficial. So that to me really, and my dad, it sparked my interest, because for those lower income families, but also just for the sport in general. And it would be awesome if all the schools could get on board.
Right. And then who knows, maybe this is that one school that comes in. So let me ask you this, because it'll lead in somewhat in questions that Ian, you sent us. But how do you teach the kids inside the house?
Oh, yeah. So it was definitely like, I'm so passionate because I love it, because I see the benefits, but also it's such a bonding thing with your child. It's not going to happen right away. Both of them, it didn't happen right away. And I think the younger you do it, the better. I kind of caught it. I think my oldest was 6, which was older. I wish I would have started earlier, but now we're over a year and a half in and it just become normal. But what I did is, we have hardwood floors, so already that's making a harder variable, which I like. It's balls traveling faster on it. So I just have soccer balls in our living room. And in our old house, we had just two open hallways. We didn't even have a goal. It was just a ball. And then I had balls scattered, maybe 5 different ones downstairs, and one in my bedroom, one in the living room, just and one in the kitchen. So anytime they go by, they would start just playing it with it. So first I made it like, can you do this? Like, watch this. And sometimes I make funny sounds with it. And it's very much like, I have a list of the very basic ball mastery that I would start with, which is like just having your foot on top of the ball, sliding it to the side of the ball, then your left foot, sliding it to the side, and then top, sliding it to this side, top, this side. And then it's soul rolling the ball. Okay, now can you soul roll it? And then can you stop it? And then can you push it with the laces? Okay, can you try turning the ball with the outside? So we'll do figure eights. We'll do little circles with the outside, small, small. I'm also very big on, I think Tom Beyer also said this. You want to keep that ball close. You want it. That's your ball. Encourage. Wow, look at that close control. Oh my gosh, look what you just did. Then as soon as it starts to click, it does take a little while before, and it doesn't have to be long either. Sometimes it would be like this morning, for instance, 5 minutes before school. That's it. Just that's all we had. And it was just very much, I can't even think how it happened this morning. I think there's just balls and one just grabbed them. And a lot of times they say, hey, you want to burst? You want a ball? I'll just go and we do a lot of 1v1 because I have two rebounders. Those are the goals in my living room. And then we just play 1v1 against each other. And I that's how I do it, is make it fun, incentivize it. So excited. I'm so encouraging. I'm talking the whole time like, wow, that's so great. Good job. Because they want your encouragement. They look to your, that's why it's so good to do when they're young, because they want to please your parent. And that's the gift to them, is just your attention and your encouragement. And then they start seeing the benefits of it and how they can control it. And it's just like, it gives them their, I just feel like it sets them off on the right foot, because now they start to feel confident that they know how to actually control, manipulate this ball. So now they're wanting to start adding. It's so fun to watch and see. So I think just start very basic, just having them touch it with the inside of their foot, touch it with the right foot, left foot, and just encourage and praise and keep trying every single day.
And so the bounce off that, because what I'm hearing when you're asking about coaching tips, the first one is create a coaching environment where they can learn.
Yeah.
You know, where the kids are starting to make decisions. So I bet it's advanced out to where now they're going 1v1. The kid's making the decision. Mm-hmm. Of which way they want to go, how they want to do it, how they want to progress.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times with the coaches, they start to force things to happen. In fact, I've got an example of one team that I've viewed quite a few practices in the recreational realm, where the kids are masters at standing in line now. I've never seen better line standers in my life.
Yeah.
But the fact that your child has a ball at their feet every day, they're in an environment that constantly moving.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be powerful. Yeah. I wish I can get that one thing across to everybody. So when I look at my job.
I feel the same way, especially when I just read the book. And I think before I started talking too much praise about it, because I was like, I believed in it. I read it. It has all these accolades. But until you see it with your own eyes, like actually work, then I was like trying to tell everybody about it, because I'm like, if I can do it, and this kid who didn't have any kind of natural technical ability, in 6 months' time, yes, he worked hard and it was tough and challenging at times. Sometimes it's frustrating. You can't do it, but you want to do it. And it's just those moments that you can also, those great just life moments. Hey, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. It wasn't easy for me to learn. It's not going to be easy. Things take time. It's hard. So then when they accomplish it, they feel so good, because they're like, and then they just get used to, it's like a dangling little carrots. And I saw that with ball mastery. It was like, you start very basic and then you start adding in, they can't do it. And then they keep trying it for a couple of weeks and then they can do it and they get so excited. And they want to show their friends that they can do this trick at practice, or just adds up. But the first or two, you may not see much right away. It's ball control. You will see stuff, but it will take time. But yeah, I wish everybody knew. I wish I knew earlier too. I would have already had a ball at their foot even earlier if I could have. Yeah, there's something about, they're comfortable. They're at home while they're brushing their teeth, they can have a ball at their foot. Or it's just top of mind and they're right there. You don't have to go outside. It's just here. And
you know, the second point I'm going to bounce off that I really like is, first of all, your energy is amazing. So then I imagine that helps a lot with them wanting to do it. But other part I was thinking is the thought process. So I always thought that the reason I think it's the number one world game is that there's not many games in the world where when the player's on the field, they're in total control.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think when you look at coaches around the area, and this is answer the question too, and what look for a coach, if you've got that one guy or gal that's got to control every single aspect, but doesn't create an environment where the kids start to make their own decisions, come up with their own solutions, then we're really doing a disservice, because the game in its most powerful, pure form is a player's game. There's no stop in a game. There's no timeouts. There's no nothing. So as a coach in an environment, you create an environment where the kids are challenged to make decisions, to come up with solutions based upon the environment and the challenges that they'll face in a real game. And it's got to look like the game. It's got to feel like the game. It can't be artificial.
Yeah.
You know, then you'll do it. And it's wild. For example, when we did some of the grassroots stuff, and I know that we have a lot of people that question the viability of that. But I think when you see it done correctly, and this is an aha moment I had from a San Angelo coach when I did the Midland one, is the 4-year-olds know the answers to the questions.
Yeah.
If you put the environment
up on it so fast, they're like sponges.
Yep. And they actually figure it out quicker than we do. And there's sometimes that As a coach, you got to let go of your ego a bit, and they ask a question, let them come up with a solution, right, and get it there. So now we're making thinkers rather than robots.
Oh,
so
you are.
That was powerful.
Like, I feel like my main things that if I just like, I'm passionate about when it comes to youth and development would be ball mastery, just giving them a technical foundation to start with, because I've had my son's a 2017. I can't tell you how many boys have come out, and it could be from different clubs, and it could be from or straight from rec, and they'll have played for 2 years. They can't turn the ball with the inside of their foot. They can't turn the ball with the outside of their foot. They can't use their left foot. So I've seen time and time again, and every time they're like, oh, like they're using their skills. I'm like, because they're young. They love skills. It gives them so much confidence and ownership and flair. It's so fun. Let them play with that. It'll get to the ping, passing, bung, bung, bung. Like, it'll get there enough. Let's not rush that. And I think ownership 100%. Is another thing. Is like, do you, maybe not when they're 4 or 5 necessarily, as they get older, like now, before I sign my son up for each season, I'm like, okay, do you want to play this season? Yes. Okay, good. This is what the requirements are for this season. And we require effort, and we require going to everything, and a positive attitude. And you mean work on certain things at home, like lay those out, but give them that decision. So I'm big on ownership, because they got to feel like it's their journey, and they just will put more into it and care more about it if it's their journey. But then what was something else that you said that I was along lines, of course, don't like that. Was it? There was something else that you said that I was like, that really made me think about development. I can't remember.
That was fair.
But basically giving them the tools at the young age, not caring about winning or pressure or top tournaments, like that stuff just doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is seeing these kids come to me and then develop right before my eyes. And then all of a sudden they have all these skills they can do. And I'm in the younger ages, so it's different. But in those younger ages, to me, it's so fulfilling, because they see the hard work that they've put into and then the fruition of it, and with no pressure, with not having to worry about competing to be in the top league or win that tournament or anything like that. We're actually going to do futsal with my team. We have to go 7v7 next. We've stayed 4 before up until this. I was very adamant about it. And so now we're going to go futsal instead. And because I just am another big believer of, why are we rushing to, they need a lot of touches. They need a lot of experience, decisions. That's what you said that I was going after.
Yes.
The decision-making, open-ended questions, and like on repeat. And it's crazy because my younger son hears the things that I say at practice to Jason and everything, and he picks up on it. So we're over here one playing 1v1, and he'll be like, oh, over there, that's a better passing angle. And I'm just like, he didn't really know what that means, but it's just, the little things, giving them that ownership of their journey, allowing them to make those decisions. It's just, I don't know. I'm passionate about setting those kids up for that right environment. And I feel like sometimes our culture here in North Texas limits that a bit.
To bounce off that as well, that in Belgium, found out that they're actually going to the younger age groups are 2v2 now.
So they are too.
Which is a wild thing. But as one's a goalkeeper, now this will blow your mind. One kid's required to be the goalkeeper.
No way.
Never bear a goal. So it ends up being a 1v1 all the time. So basically, and they flip the whatever their break is, or the quarter, half, or however they do it. So it's constant 1v1. So the kids never, ever escape that situation.
That's it. 1v1's in development too. People don't do that. And that's such a huge, like people like Anton Drance, like they, that's part of one of his like, checklist when they come back is 1v1s in the competitive cauldron or whatever that he referred to that. And a lot of people think, we're not going to waste time on that. And I'm like, those are there's so many 1v1 moments in a game. That's fun. My kids love doing 1v1. So
now to tag on that too, with the 1v1 is that now the next thing you see when you go around a lot of places where we have these skills coaches, where now it's 1v1 without a purpose or without an idea. So without application of that 1v1, it means nothing. So when I take on a player, it has to be for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be something open up, something creating by doing so. Not just because I received the ball and never picked up my head, never saw anything.
Yes.
Now I'm trying to take on players. it's a forethought rather than an afterthought to control.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think a lot of it goes back to another coaching tip would be the eyes. Yes. And I'll tell you what, if I could think of one thing, in fact, all the coaching courses that I'm teaching.
I think I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to be so excited about it, if it is.
As a coach, it's like a player. So when you watch the game as a coach, you don't look at the ball. You look at the players off the ball.
Yeah.
And you see what they're looking at and what they're thinking of. And too many times with coaches and players, we get locked in on the ball. Yeah. And in fact, the best way to tell whether or not the team's getting it or not is that bunch ball, right? You always say bunch ball or pack ball or whatever the heck you want to call it.
Yeah.
I'll guarantee 90% of the time, the reason they're bunching up is because their eyes are attracted to the ball and what you're staring at, you're going to naturally go to.
Right.
And so that's some of the stuff that we look at to try to fix, to try to show techniques or the ideas within the courses to open those things up.
Yeah, for
sure. You know, and it's through games-based manner. And that's thing. Some people sometimes when they do the grassroots courses, they think they're going to come in and get how to run a drill. And I tell you what, drills kind of been like a little tag in the back of my neck. When I hear that word, I just kind of, because a drill means there's no idea or pattern behind it. A progression and a practice, right?
Yeah.
Instead of setting up an activity where a kid learns, where he's going to face things or she's going to face ideas, they have to make decisions to come out. So
yes.
In fact, I've got a survey I put out to some of the associations that they're helping us get feedback on the coaching education side here.
Yeah.
But one person put in there, I don't want to do grassroots because they got to learn skills. All they do is teach sharks and minnows. And I thought, you know, if you really look at for sharks and minnows, what it is, it is skills.
Yeah.
Because there's no cones. Yeah. And you don't. There's no lines, you know, and then to your point, when you have the kid that doesn't do right foot, left foot or sole roll or whatever, I guarantee there's a coach back there that's putting a line and they're dribbling through cones.
Yeah.
Or with this one example of the practice I've watched lately is they've got a line of 20 girls or 18 girls and they pass to a person, they pass back and then they shoot at a goal. Or even worse, they'd have some parents serving a ball off the side and then the kid runs up. And so I think there's one practice where I counted one kid had 10 touches on the ball in an hour and a half. And then get to the game and they scream at the players about not trying or motivation, but they got to play.
Literally, I had a parent last week. A kid came out for the first time. He has been playing for another club. I don't know how long for the other club, but enough time. And she said, I was 9 minutes in. And I said, oh, my gosh, he's already touched the ball more in this practice than he has the entire season with his other team. And that's because they had a roster size of 16 kids on their team. And I don't know what they're doing over there, but I am also I like to keep small. And touches, that's such a huge thing in the younger ages, getting those touches. So that's why I also am not the biggest on pressuring going into tons of tournaments. Because I'm like, I'd rather just have another training session because they're going to get way more touches at this age. I'm talking, my son's 7. So I don't know how valuable doing a bunch of tournaments really are for development. Touches wise, they're definitely not getting that many unless they're playing 3v3 or a smaller side, which most of them now are doing 77 and pushing 99 or whatever.
Well, I hate to say this, but I'll probably get myself in trouble with what I'm about to say. But tournaments end up being more about money.
Yeah.
And making money than they are actually development. Because if you think about it, even looking at the Federation, there's a great book by John Cone that the Federation uses. In fact, I've got it. So I can find it right here. Okay. Yes, the player holistic.
What's it called? I'm going to get this then. Okay. The holistic method. Oh, okay.
And so what it does is it talks about load and whatnot and how we do it. And so through the D course, they start introducing the C and the B. We're spending a lot of time in it. But if you think about the time that it takes, if you're playing a full-on match, one game in a weekend, it's going to take 72 hours for your body to recover. And so if you start to look at like play three games in one day, then the next day you got three more games and it's a final, a trophy. Gosh, I probably shouldn't say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. A lot of times you look at it, is it more about a parent social event or is it about the development of players? You know, and then I get that there's a time and a place for everything and we like the tournaments, but sometimes you look at it as, is it really developmentally appropriate to those players to do that? Because by the end of the day, and I'm sure you played, I didn't have a choice, but with your dad, but just like that same thing when I look at my kids and even when I play, when you get done with that, and I'll give the best example in the PDL team, my God, after we played that Thursday game, we had to turn out and play on Saturday, those guys are dead. I mean, there's just nothing left in the tank. And then now your decisions go away. Now all those things start to happen. Right. And your body isn't in recovery. It's not like a football game or a basketball game or,
yeah,
God forbid, baseball, where you're getting tons of time to recover and you can play games back to back. I mean, if it's done correctly, your 11 on the field are going to be totally gassed.
Yeah.
And totally toasted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, so our team, that's why I feel like our team is different, because I don't press the tournaments. And I just feel like there's going to be tons of them as they get older. Why do we need to rush that? I'd rather have our own. Like last week, we had these little 1v1 blow-up fields and I blew those up and we had a 1v1 wars. And that was that, instead of doing some tournaments. Just, they probably get more touches out of that anyway. So it's playing that long game.
Truth. Now, here's the problem with the clubs that I see now. I've got a lot of really good friends with clubs. If we're honest, in order for them to stay in business, they've got to keep their customers happy. Yeah. So now whether or not the customers understand the reality of what they're doing to the kids or not is really kind of unimportant.
Yeah.
Well, I can guarantee with some of the club coaches I know are quality people, really good, exceptional people. So I'm not by any means bagging on clubs.
Yeah.
But if I'm competing with this club in order to keep my players and mom and dad don't understand that player development was based upon this. And you know, that group, little Jimmy's mom, boy, they're so fired up and they've gone all weekend and had great social events and they do 20 tournaments.
Yep.
And they play in 4 different leagues. That's equated to quality. And
that's
so now
the problem
in order
right
to keep
there,
a business.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's just
I was
reality.
Telling a coach, we were playing in one of our last league games and this coach comes up and asks how long have my kids been playing together. And I was telling him about our team, whatever. And then he said something about 77. I go, yeah, we're not going to go 77 next year. We're going to do futsal. And he said, oh man, futsal's so great. He's like, how are you able to do that? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it's the parents. They're the ones that are pushing the 77. Literally, that's what the coach said. And I'm like,
yes,
that doesn't surprise me, but yeah, yeah.
And in order to keep his job, he's got to do it. Yeah. And keep his job in order not to lose those players.
Yeah. So I get it.
You got to go with the customer.
I get it. It's just that it is.
It comes back to the parent education side.
Yes.
This is where parents have to understand bigger is not better. Smaller is better when it comes to close, I would call it close contact sports like soccer is. Soccer is not 11v11 field. It is a bunch of literally, I would say 3v3 fields going up pitch at a time. You're moving the pitch on the larger pitch. And I don't think parents truly understand that. I sat there listening to a parent one night when my son's practice. He's a U11 and he'll be underneath the U12 next year. And the parent says, let's go 11v11 sooner. I'm like, why? I go, the touches go down by, I can't remember, but it's 75% average professional player touches a ball for less than 2 minutes in a 90-minute match. There's 22 players on that field. And the average touch time is 44 minutes on the ball. And I'm like, where are you getting these ideas from? You're all talking about earlier about the training sessions. I'm going to have to go back because I'm taking notes. We're talking about the lines and talking about the player development. Everything I have talked to and every coach I've talked to, it doesn't matter where they're from, that has a true understanding of development. It has to be live action. It's great that you can go do these skills around a cone or a mannequin. I always tell my son, I built a mannequin for him and I put up in the backyard. I make him play against me and the mannequin.
Yep.
Because it's another thing in the way of him to play. For him to have something overcome, but they all said you have to have that line. So there should never be a moment where you have 6 kids in line because everyone should be involved in some way. And I think parents need to take a step back saying, yeah, they can go through this process of passing the ball. I don't know how many soccer games I watch every weekend, but it's the same pattern of the ball passing. You're talking about creativity. And as a parent, that's so critical. You're talking about the younger ages, trying to understand it. I feel like this is lost at the older ages. If you go watch Manchester City go play a match, you know exactly what they're going to do with the ball because that's what they've been taught to do. You don't see the creativity even at the high levels anymore because they know what this vibe, hey, this type of pass over and over again, it wears out the player. And I'm like,
Real Madrid has some creativity. I'll say that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I'm just using this as an example because you see how they will pass the W in front of the goal and pass up the wing.
Yeah.
It might be the right wing this time. It might be the left wing the next time. Or it might be through the middle, but there's a pattern. You start seeing patterns. And as a parent, I teach my kid, look for the patterns.
Yeah.
When you play against a team, look for who they pass to. You're going to start seeing patterns that they only go up the right side. They only go up the left side. They only pass to this player.
It's tactical, you know? Yeah.
Right. And you're teaching him. But this was what I was doing when he was playing 4v4. It wasn't even at 7v7 or 9v9, this was at 4v4 I was teaching him this stuff and explaining to his whole entire team, because I was the co-coach, and explaining to all of them, look for it, look what foot they're touching, and start thinking. You talked about watch where the eyes are going. I can't tell you how many times I watched the coaches on the sideline watch the ball ping pong back and forth and not watch the players. And I had a conversation with a good friend, and he was telling me, you have to journal through the whole game. Like a mental journal. You can't journal during the match.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, damn.
But as soon as you're done, you sit at the field and look at the field and replay the whole match in your mind for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and not leave. So you don't lose that memory as a coach, because it gives you a chance to reflect also and journal it. And he goes, that's really big. And most coaches don't do that. They pack up their stuff and they get to the car.
Yeah.
And he goes, but sitting at the pitch allows you to visualize what just happened.
Yeah.
And he goes, not many coaches will do that. And he goes, that was something it took him years to master, to do as a coach. He goes, if the game ends at 9 o'clock at night, I'm hoping they don't turn off the lights before I get to my car. And he goes, and it was an eye-awakening experience as a parent, because he's coaching 11v11, much older boys. But this is his philosophy, was how do you bring it back down to more of the player-centric approach, and how you have that culture. And you guys have talked about it indirectly. And to me, culture is everything. It's, you guys have both talked about the player-centric culture.
Yeah.
The bottom-up culture that you have instilled. The players are driving it. The players are excited. Players are doing this. You're just fostering the environment. And that's what parents don't understand. Christine, you talked about you're going able to go indoor. People would lose their mind today. If you took teams over, Warren, you may be able to back me up on this. If you go to Europe today, they tell at younger ages, they might not touch a ball until game day during the week. They might not touch it at all until game day. Parents would lose their mind.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I was kind of done about that, because PSV, I got back earlier this year. I got to go over and watch their deal. They do it totally different. Their kids play soccer. And they said one thing that, and a couple of different things that really stood out to me. One of those is that they have a place where, you can look this up, they do soccer training, but then they also play basketball and they play volleyball. They play all these different sports and they do all these things, and they do it in addition. Second thing, he said that they never, ever tell their kids what to do as far as the game. Everything's questioning, everything's creating environments, everything's built upon them. And coming from like Eindhoven, PSV, you're going to have players, because you're not going to be a Real Madrid. You can't afford to compete with a Real Madrid. So you got to develop players that are going to be top level players you can sell off to those big clubs in order to keep your business going. And that really stood out to me. Bounce off that culture idea. I want you to think about this, too. And this is something that over my years from being direct coach, when I first started off in high school and all that, I think my job, I've got to do a better job here in North Texas of getting coaching education out and really doing a better job explaining it. The survey we did shows that most of the coaches in there want that coaching education. They want to be supported. But if we're realistic, it ends up being, it's a weird deal. And correct me if you disagree, I'm okay with that. But if you take any local soccer association, for example, there's going to be one coach that wins the lottery at 4v4. Now, he may not know anything, but he's going to have the best athletes. They're going to solve the problems that are going to fix it. They're going to be bigger, faster, stronger. They're going to win all the games. Instantly, that coach becomes the best coach.
Yeah.
Now, he may not be the best coach, but he's got the best players.
Yeah.
So naturally, the community then goes to that best coach, and they think, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. He's got the best athletes. And so they start to grow. Now they get to an age when they're starting to go club. There's going to be two options. The club's going to draw him in, and they're going to put him in the club, and then they're going to start hopefully developing him. And there's the really top-notch clubs will do that.
Yeah.
Or they're going to start picking apart his team. Or they'll take away his team from him after a couple of years, and they start doing it. But then the key factor, I think, you look at this coach, then if you want to really want to pick a coach, is their education background. Not saying that a piece of paper gives you knowledge, because anybody who says, oh, you got an A license, whatever, it has nothing to do with the license. It has to do with the willingness to grow and learn as a person, to be knowledgeable about the sport. So if you're that,
to continue that coach to learn.
Yes, nonstop. Oh my God, every day I learn what I don't know, and I don't know much. And well, you start to look at those people and you start to think, that guy that gets to that point where now he's got the high level, whatever, 11v11 team, and they're still doing lines. You look at the background and think, okay, along the way, did you learn as a coach to grow? Or did you rely on the fact that you had the best athletes that figured out the game? And what a disservice we've done, because when you start to look at those players to go on to national teams, high school teams, college teams, they don't know how to think anymore.
Yeah.
And nobody knows how to defend anymore. You know, nobody knows how to play the game and get their eyes up and see, because that's not what lends at the 4v4 model. Yeah. And the parents are drawn naturally to that winning thing rather than development thing. And that's where two things. I have to do a better job in education of our coaches, and I've got to do a better job of getting that out to that 4v4 rec coach.
Yeah.
And that's something I got to find a way to do that. And the second thing is, maybe we need to have a comprehensive parent education program so they understand. Now, they're not going to believe it, because winning at all costs is always going to be something they're going to fight, because they want to be around the water cooler explaining that their kid's on the best 4v4 team in the world. But at the end of the day, we're really missing the piece that's going to make these kids grow. And I don't think it's specific to soccer. I think this is probably across the board with all athletics and even in school.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think for me, like with my team, we had them since rec. And they knew about, my dad was also in my ear. And then I went on my own tangent of discovery and reading and podcasting and books and articles and talking to people and everything, because I became a little obsessed with it too. What other countries are doing, yada, yada. And I dug myself a rabbit hole on youth development. But when that started happening, if I am reading or learning about something and I really am passionate about it, I'm going to want to tell everybody about it, share it. So for me, with my team, is as I was learning, so were they. As I was, new articles, new things coming out, new countries doing different things, whether they read it or not, it doesn't matter to me necessarily. Like, I'm sending it out, and there's a lot, and then lots of parents, just because of those multiple conversations, grew that trust that you're really wanting to do it the right way. And so that's why I do feel, I know a lot of teams maybe would not want to do 5v5 futsal. They would go to a 77 team, think that's not good enough or whatever. But because those seeds were is education, the parent education was done before then, so they understood why I want to stay small sided.
Well, if you look at the twos, oh, go ahead, Ian. I'm sorry.
If you look at, if you're talking, you're good. Talking about the small sided side of the game, if you look at the rest of the world, Brazil is a great example of this. They play Neymar. I think it was named there for a second. Like, a lot of them don't start playing on a real grass pitch until they're 13, 14 years old. They're playing futsal. They're playing these small-sided games until they actually have mastery of the ball. Mm-hmm. It's not anything to deal with anything else. If they can't control the ball, how will they be able to play on the field? If they can't make those short, quick passes to their teammates and make the overlap, there's no point of putting them on a larger field if they can't handle that, because that's what the game is. It's a bunch of small little overlaps, a bunch of little small passes that lead to bigger things. As they progress and get older and they can make those long 60-yard switches from wherever they're at on the field, it's a different story. But when they're young, if they can actually read what's in front of them, yes, I'm talking about the eyes and keeping it up and not bunching, it's all small-sided games. It doesn't matter.
Can I take that example one step further? So like a Neymar example? It's actually no coach, no parameters, probably four pieces of trash and a ball.
Yeah.
And his buddies. And if Neymar doesn't produce, he's probably not going to get picked on the team to get to play with his buddies anymore.
Yeah.
And then he's going to go and he's going to watch the games and experiment. There's nobody telling him what to do. It's not two practices a week.
Yeah.
It's him, just him and his ball and his buddies playing the game.
Yeah.
And then somebody looks at him and says, man, well, that kid can play. Then they start bringing him into different environments. They start advancing him out. So around the world, and this is why I think, to take it back to the Dallas ISD thing,
yeah,
if you could build that
technical foundation at the beginning, that would be so great.
I just play the game. Just play the game.
Yeah.
Sometimes your best coach is, and this kind of goes back to my first year that I'm learning how to be a coach, right? And man, there's so many things I did wrong. I want to apologize to all the players if they're listening to me that used to play for me. Yes. So sorry I screwed this up. But I'll never forget drills. We did drills all the time. Drills all the time. Lines, none of this. And but my rec coach, because God loves San Angelo Soccer Association, I still don't know why they let some college kid coach a rec team. And thank God they did. I'm here now because of it. But I was drilled to a drill. And then this other team would beat us. And I'd ask the kids, because that's when I started to do the club stuff.
Yeah.
What do you guys do in practice? Because I'm thinking, what magic does this guy have? I go, coach, all we do is scrimmage all the time. It made me so mad. I thought, well, what do you got? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So drill, and try to go back and get the kids going again. And go, what did you guys do at Powell? We just scrimmaged the whole time. Yeah. And then looking back on it, I thought, who was the real coach and who was the idiot?
Yeah.
I'm starting to think it flipped to be what I didn't want to say was it was me.
Yeah.
Doing drills and nothing was applicable, where this guy doesn't know anything about coaching the game. But what he did know is you put them on the field and let the kids figure it out.
Yeah.
And the kids figured it out and they could play.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you don't know, it's better to play. So then you talk about play, practice, play.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder why U.S. Soccer came out with that.
Yeah.
Because
I think play, practice, play is the right model. And the more I have paid attention, the more I understood the play, practice, play is when I went back and actually went back and read my notes on my grassroots side of it. I've never gone beyond my grassroots coaching. But the one thing that stuck out to me, and I keep on remembering, and I wrote it over and over in my notes, it was when you get to the last play part, the practice part has to be part of it. So many times these coaches go, I'm doing play, practice, play. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Well, you're not implementing the practice part into the last form of play. So if you're working on overlapping or give and takes, and they aren't doing it in their last play part, you set up the flow of the practice wrong. Because at the end of the day, you should be able to have that last practice part of that last play, and you're accomplishing some type of goal. I love the example I got from Dennis Genis about this. In Europe, if they were working on 1-2s in their scrimmages or whatever it was, that's how they got their points in the last play part. It wasn't who scored the goal. They got a point because they accomplished the 1-2, or they accomplished something that they were working in the practice part and they're doing it in the game part. And that's what's missing. We're so focused on what happens when we score. You hear it all the time. Kids pay more attention watching highlight reels of the ball going in the net than the buildup of the ball going to the player getting the ball. And we would just take a step back. And there's a whole app now just focusing on what happened before the goal.
Yeah.
The plays that build up before the goal. And I think we as parents need to make sure our coach is implementing the really, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that's how I interpret it after rereading my notes on the play, practice, play. It wasn't just to let them go out there and scrimmage and learn from the game, but it's also to make sure they're implementing what they're practicing in their play. Because if you're just letting them go out and play and you spent 20 minutes, 30 minutes working on give and takes and they're not doing it, what's the point of having that practice part?
Yeah.
Or did the practice part give a good enough environment for them to make the decision to see how it related to the game? Because if they can't take that practice middle part and apply it to the end game, then was it really there? And that's the magic of it. But I think that comes back to education. And if you look at the grassroots thing, I don't mean to be a selling point, but every single coach that goes through grassroots gets 8 practices that are fundamentally sound, that are built for that different models and the ages and stages of the kids directly to that. Because like you said, you can think about it, how many people say, oh, at 4v4, we have a formation, we pass back and forth, they open up and you go look at the game and there's one kid that takes over the game and scores lots of goals. You know what I mean? It doesn't developmentally, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, you can create situations where they start to see it and start developing, start making those decisions and it'll come about, but it's not something that's going to happen early on.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them don't have the awareness, the ability yet. They're just not there. Why are we forcing it? There was a coach that said he wanted to move our team to 7v7. And I was the head coach. Then I became the assistant coach and we found another. I thought it'd be better to, I was super busy with work. And I was like, I thought it'd be better to have somebody else come. And he did. And he wanted to do 7v7. And the parents have talked to me and heard from me this whole time. And it was like an agreement that we were going to continue to do 4v4 until we no longer could. But he wanted to do 7v7 because, when I asked him why, he said, because we've mastered 4v4.
Yeah,
and I was 4v4. Just like, no, we have not. Like, what? Yeah. No. Have you seen them play? That's not mastery of 4v4. He just wanted to get more heads in 7v7. But yeah, it's crazy to me. It's like, why are we, if they can't even really move around a 4v4 field that great, and yet we're going to move them to 7v7? It's crazy.
I'll say, like, you're talking about going 77. Like, I questioned my daughter's coach. They moved 77, but it was more of trying to grow the team because we're constantly cycling players and parents wanted 77. But practices is all 4v4 setup. It's not moving beyond that mentality. And watching them play, we are one of those unique parents that has stayed through multiple losing years. It wasn't until last year my daughter's team actually was winning. And it was like we had to go compete with local clubs in the area for them to be better. And it wasn't because they master it. It's because they have to keep up with the local surrounding. And getting parents to buy into it, they were seeing how well these girls were playing. And it's if the defender has the ball and she's dribbling up, someone's falling back to fill the position. And this is on a 4v4 field. They stay spread out. Everyone else was clumping. And we had parents come out and ask, like, how are you doing this? Well, we've lost for years. This is why. Because we didn't change our core philosophy.
Yeah.
And this was really great to hear from the coach because she believes, like, she didn't want to go 7v7. It's that we had to in order to keep players on the team, which is really sad.
Yeah.
Still understand that.
Yeah.
But this means they can stay 7v7 even longer. And that is the intention. It's not to move them up right away. It is when they age up in the league, next time they'll go 99. But they can stay a whole nother year in 77 and actually truly understand the roles that they have to play. And that's the dynamic I think parents have to understand, is that their players have to understand a role and not a position. Because we are so stuck on our player has to be a striker. And I tell my son, I don't care where you're playing on the field. You might end up in the striker position. You have to learn how to play that. Because the striker is now in your midfield position. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You have to understand their role. Doesn't mean you can't drift back at some point in time and switch up. But parents have to be educated enough to know that their players have to be confident enough to dribble with the ball. You guys talk about mastery. And my brain is racking it in this whole entire conversation, still going back to what you're doing with Thacker for Success. And I'm like, it doesn't matter the age. If the IQ is there, you can teach anyone to be technically talented. They have to have the IQ and the smarts to go with it. And not to be mean, some kids have great soccer vision and IQ, and some kids don't, and they're just wizards with the ball. And then you have the ones that can barely dribble the ball, but they have the vision of where they need to put the ball, but they don't have the skill sets to do it. I'd rather take the kid as a coach and develop the kid that has the vision than the kid that can do all the stuff with the ball but can't dribble beyond 3 feet. And it just blows my mind parents are caught up on that mentality. Like, this team does all this fancy movement, all this fancy skills, but can they actually do it and be successful? Hey, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. I truly enjoyed it. As the host, I didn't do as much talking as I normally do, and I was very appreciative of the dialogue that we had, and it wasn't what I wanted originally, but it turned out way better than what I had planned, and I hope you all have enjoyed it too. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.